Hello and good morning. This is Raise the Vibe on Voice of Vashon, KVSH 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Liz Peterson of Liz's Healing Touch here on Island. Today in the studio, I have Emily Herrick. Emily Herrick is a yoga instructor here on Vashon Island. She is going to be discussing restorative yoga. Emily grew up in New York, New Jersey, and Michigan, and made her way to Vashon from East Hampton, New York, on a leap of faith in 2014. She has learned over the years to follow her gut. Although she has been practicing yoga for 17 years in 2013, it wasn't until she resigned from a job that was holding her back on many levels, completed yoga teacher training, began meditating daily and teaching yoga, that she realized the life-changing potency of these practices. It now brings her great joy to share them with others. Hi, Emily. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So great to have you on.
Thank you.
Really interested in learning more about restorative yoga this morning. Mm-hmm. So first, before we jump into that, let's learn a little bit more about you. So can you tell us, you know, a little bit about your past, where you came from before you moved to Vashon and what you did?
Sure. Yeah.
Great.
When I think back on it, I can't believe this is where I live now. I grew up in upstate New York until I was about third grade, and then we moved to Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I lived for about 5 or 6 years, and then New Jersey. And then I went to college in the Northeast. So I pretty much, most of my life, I was in New York or New Jersey. Kind of thought I was a lifelong New Yorker. I was the middle of three girls, kind of a strict Catholic family, you know, very down the straight and narrow road. Yoga was something I had never even thought about till way later. So I'll get into that in a minute.
Okay.
And then when I discovered Vashon, it was a very quick thing. It was, I always say, I just followed my gut, and that's what brought us here. We just discovered it, and we were here within 6 months. Being my husband, Michael, and me, and our two dogs. So yeah, just really never imagined that I'd live in the Northwest, but I love it.
What was your profession before you found yoga?
I've done a few things. I sometimes say I've had like a patchwork quilt of a resume.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. I got a degree in communications. I worked in advertising for a while. And then at one point I was working as a proofreader, and I read an article, I think it was in Cosmopolitan magazine, about the library world. You know, getting a degree in library science. So I ended up getting a library science degree and being a librarian for a while.
Cool.
I was a children's librarian and a middle school librarian, public library. And then I ended up going back to the advertising world for a while and then back to the library world. So I kind of ping-ponged between those two for a while. And then I also had a professional organizing business for a while where I helped people clear clutter out of their home.
Oh, interesting. You know, that's up right now. You know, a lot of books coming out about clear your clutter, clear your space, you know, look at that and do for you. Mm-hmm. Can you touch a little bit about that? That's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've always just felt like that's something that comes naturally to me. I'm always scanning a room and seeing like what needs to get out of here, what needs to go, or what needs to be moved to another place. So it's just something that's really always been just part of who I am, I think. And then it did start to become a really popular field, I think. Let me think, when would that have been? Like in the early 2000s, probably?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's still going strong. But at the time I lived in East Hampton, New York, it was a little tough getting it going consistently because it's such a seasonal town. You know, like it gets very busy in summer and then the rest of the year it's kind of quiet.
Right.
So it was a little hard to maintain that, but I just, I really like the idea of your environment contributing to your own inner state of calm and peace, which I really believe. I feel like everything is energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
So, yeah. So even having stuff around that just doesn't serve your life anymore, people think it's innocuous, but I really think, because I've heard so many people that I've worked with say the same kinds of things. Like, oh, I feel like I can breathe again. And,
yes.
Oh, I feel lighter. You know, I really think moving that stuff out of your life that you don't need really makes a difference.
Yeah, really creates stagnation in your life when you have a lot of clutter around. Mm-hmm. You can really feel it.
Right.
You know, it's a reflection of who you are really, you know, internally. Mm-hmm. You know what your outer world looks like.
Right, exactly. And it's just this idea of everything is either something from your past or your present or your future. So if you have a lot of stuff in your life that's from your past or you think you might use it someday, so it's for your future, it's taking away energy of having your life be more present.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. And you did a radio show here on Vashon with a friend around that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Rachel Waldron, who's an interior designer here, she and I think we stumbled upon each other through Facebook originally.
And
we just started chatting and we had this idea to try having a radio show. So we called it Inner Space. And Rachel spoke from the perspective of more like, you know, how a room would look. And I spoke from this perspective of like your interior space of you as a person. So it was kind of a quirky idea, but we had a bunch of episodes and we really enjoyed it. But we both just got too busy and we couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about focusing on the inner space and how you view that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as again, like it relates to your physical space, but also just being present. I think we all live in such a distracted world now with all the technology, which has some really great things about it, but not being mindful. I mean, just simple examples that we all see all the time. Like if you look around in a airport waiting area or in a restaurant or even people walking down the street, sometimes we forget how we're just kind of mindlessly staring at our phones in those situations. And it's kind of throws you for a loop when you see a whole room full of people doing it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a biggie. The whole thing about just being more mindful about how and when we use technology. A really big one for me is just, I think starting in small steps is really important for everything.
Right.
So I think I always feel like if you just start with not having your phone at a meal.
Yes, I do that at home with the kids.
Yeah. It's just
while we're eating.
Because it is kind of ubiquitous that you see people with their phone either on the table or they're looking at it while they're eating. It's a really important thing to eat mindfully, I think. So
We're at the hardware store 3 days a week, and I do. I see that. People, you know, sitting there not in conversation and on their phones. It's like, okay, here's a time for connection.
Right. You know? Especially, it's one thing when you're alone, but if you have people with you, then I really think it's important. And even when you're alone, it's a good exercise for yourself to notice, like, how much do I have that impulse to grab the phone?
Right. How much am I investing?
Yeah. You know?
Although it is nice to be entertained when you're by yourself.
Right.
You know, with something. Unless you're meditating or doing something like that, for sure. It's hard not to be sucked in by that.
Right. But that's the whole awareness piece, I think, that I don't know. I think everything comes down to awareness, like just noticing, oh, I do reach for my phone all the time.
Yeah.
And it really is an addiction, you know, I mean, we're all addicted. But if you can start to bring some mindfulness and awareness to it and sort of not to beat yourself up for doing it, but just to say like, oh, yeah, I almost did that. And maybe I'd rather do something else right now, like just people watch or anything that's different that keeps you more present.
Okay, so tell us about your path to yoga. What led you to yoga?
Oh, yeah. As I said, I grew up in kind of a strict family and did not have any interest or awareness of that until I was right around when I turned 40. For me, turning 40 was this big turning point. You know, I really suddenly started really taking a look at everything in my life. And that's when I started practicing yoga, too. Mm. So it was, 23 years ago.
Wow. So do you remember, like, did it pop into your head, hey, maybe I should start doing yoga? Or did you have a friend who did yoga? Or did you see it somewhere and go, hey, that might be interesting. I think I'm going to check that out. How did that pan out for you?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I don't even recall how I first got interested in it. But I think it was all just part of a general kind of a waking up.
Oh,
yeah.
Fine.
And I never thought I would ever teach yoga.
So what was the first yoga that you did?
So mostly I've done, in the beginning, I did a lot of vinyasa, which is flowing movements where you coordinate your movement with your breath.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most yoga styles emphasize the breath, but it's more of a movement practice. And of course, most people, especially in this country, think of yoga. When they think of yoga, they think of just what's called asana, which is the movement part. But Are you familiar with the term the eight limbs of yoga?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
I practice that, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes it really interesting to me. Another thing I did, I did mention that I was in the library field.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, was another thing that drew me to studying yoga, is that there's just so much to learn. You know, there's just between the philosophy and the asana and the eight limbs and all the different areas, the anatomy, there's so many things to learn. I feel like I'm really a super strong lifelong learner. That's just something that really fascinates me. I'm always taking a course or reading. So I think that
I relate.
Yeah. I think that was one of the things that drew me to studying yoga, was that it's just, there's so much to know and so much to learn. I'll never know it all. But
yeah, there's way more to yoga than just, you know, mm-hmm. the movements, the
right.
asanas. And it really does take you on an inner journey.
Yeah.
So through that inner journey, can you talk a little bit about eight limbs for people who don't know about it?
Well, I don't know if I can remember them all.
That's
but
okay.
The first two, yamas and niyamas, are about the way we relate to ourselves and the way we treat and relate to other people. So those are a good starting point.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is pranayama, which is breathing. And honestly, I can't remember off the top of my head all the other ones. But it's just, I think those two are a really great starting point.
Cause
it's, you know, thinking about how, because being kind to yourself is something that I think a lot of people find challenging. But you really can't be kind to others until you're kind to yourself first.
Right.
Kind of has to come first.
Mm. And how else do you weave that into your daily life?
Well, I'm a meditator as well. I meditate every day. In fact, I used the Insight Timer app.
Ah.
Are you familiar with
it? I am.
Okay.
Downloaded, haven't used it much yet, but
okay.
On my to-do list.
It keeps, if you want it to, it can keep track of how many days you've meditated. And I think this week I reached 2 years consecutive days of meditation that I've never missed a day.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah, even if I only have 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. It really does help with outer focus.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, staying, you know, of course, staying calm and staying mindful.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, responding to everything, observing everything, it really is important.
Right.
Yeah. It really does change how you act in the world.
Right. I like that you use the word respond, because as opposed to react.
Yes.
Because when you're not very aware, or not you, but anyone,
yeah.
When one is not aware, they can be in reaction, whether on kind of on autopilot, and, you know, certain things can set them off, like somebody cutting them off in traffic or something like that. But when you've meditated for a while, you do start to have a more mindful response, and a response is a little different. It's like you take that second to go, maybe take a deep breath or do whatever you need to do to just say, I can choose something different.
Yes. Thank goodness. Yes. More and more people are starting to meditate now. So
maybe
the world will get a little bit more peaceful.
Right.
Which would be nice.
I hope so.
With everything going on.
But again, I really believe in this idea of having even if you have a little bit of time, most people would say, oh, I only have 5 minutes. I can't do it.
Oh, that's more. Yeah.
But I really believe if I have 5 minutes, it's still worth doing.
Yeah. It really brings you in a center.
Mm-hmm.
It calms you, grounds you.
Whatever little bit of time you have, just do it. Because I think the consistency is more important than the amount of time.
Mm-hmm. It's basically reprogramming the brain, you know, creating new synapses in the brain.
Right.
Yeah, which is fun.
Yeah. We used to believe that wasn't possible, but now it's a lot different.
Thank goodness. You know, we can reprogram all those things that we learned in childhood and do things in a different and new way.
Right.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
I like those prospects.
Definitely.
Which bring into my healing practice as well, you know, retraining all of those things that we've learned, like kind of untraining ourselves.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Anything else that you bring from Eight Limbs into your life that would help our listeners?
Let
or maybe
think.
Kind of motivate them and go, hey, maybe this is something I want to do.
Yeah. I mean, I really believe the three practices that make the most difference for me are the daily meditation, daily yoga, even if it's just a few minutes, and just getting outside into nature.
Mm, you know? Yes.
I mean, we're
I
so fortunate.
That all the time.
Yeah. We're so fortunate to live in such a beautiful place. And even just, again, if it's a few minutes, just to go outside and walk, especially we have all these beautiful woods, and to walk in the woods. I mean, it's been proven that it's beneficial. You know, we call it our forest bath.
Yes, I love that new book, Forest Bathing, yeah. You know, the pinene that we're inhaling, you right. know, calming our nervous system.
Right. Yeah, and even just living with the rhythm of the seasons as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we can't always sleep only when the sun is out, especially in the winter. That would be tough. But just the reason that the seasons exist and all kinds of other rhythms are for a reason.
Can you speak a little bit more about that for us?
Yeah, I mean, I that's often
also
just
fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, I often think about just things like, you know, flowers just bloom, you know, like we may, I think humans have a tendency to make things difficult and make things harder than they might have to be. Maybe it's just the way the human brain works. I don't know. But, you know, when you think about flowers just bloom and the sun just shines, you know, it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can all learn a lot of lessons from that. And there's little things happening around us, little miracles happening around us all the time that we, again, when we're staring at our phone or we're just not tuned in, we're probably missing a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. It makes life more exciting when you try to think of it that way. I always loved the, is it Einstein, I think, who said there are two ways to look at life. Mm-hmm. One is as if nothing is a miracle, and the other is as if everything is a miracle.
Yeah, I love that too.
Yeah.
It's a great quote.
I remember once hearing somebody say, I mean, think about it. It's just completely amazing that we're walking around.
Yes, everything is a miracle.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the way our life can flow from one thing to the next, where things, you know, in flow mm-hmm. into our life, just one thing after another. And if we really follow those, we can, mm-hmm. you know, really like, this is your path and this is where you're going. I'm going to start rambling now. I'll stop.
Yeah, but no, the flow is good.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the philosophy of yoga?
Oh, boy.
I know, but there's more to yoga, so I think it'd be fun, you know, for people to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's a topic I need to study, and I don't know a lot about it, but okay. I do know that Patanjali's Yoga Sutras is mm-hmm. a really important text to study. And of course, the Bhagavad Gita is another one. It's the kind of thing, like every time you read something like that, pretty much true of most books, but you really like discover things that you're like, is this the same book? I don't even remember that, you know, because it's deep.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot to know there.
Yeah, it definitely makes you look at life in a new way. Mm-hmm. Maybe gain new perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And anatomy, so we can flow into anatomy, because I'm sure you've studied a lot about anatomy with yoga.
Explain a little bit
about how that relates in yoga.
It's interesting because my, and I don't know about other yoga teacher trainings, but sort of the basic teacher training model is 200 hours. And we did, of course, get into anatomy, but I've always felt like, wow, I really don't know enough about that.
Mm.
You know, I really wanted to learn more. So I've taken, I took an online course with the same person that I just came back from taking an in-person training with, a restorative yoga training, which I'll talk about too. But I went through this online anatomy course, two of them with her last year, and I'm now redoing it because I think I have lifetime access, or at least for a few years, because there's just so much to know, you know, but the human body is such a fascinating thing to study.
And I'm sure you work with the human, obviously, in mm-hmm. your classes.
Yeah.
So how do you guide people, you know, in becoming aware of their physical body and how it's moving in during the practice?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, I think I try to take people away from this idea that was really prevalent for a long time that everybody needs to look the same way in the pose. You know, like this is how we do the pose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really glad that the yoga world is starting to move away from that in the last few years, and people are more aware that, you know, all our bodies are so different. We're all going to look different
mm-hmm.
in the same pose. And it also put a lot of pressure on people to expect, you know, I need to, like, I remember people saying things like, in triangle pose, pretend you're between two panes of glass. And it's like, that's crazy. I mean, first of all, the position of your pelvis, you're going to break the glass. Or the one about you're balancing a teacup on your sacrum and don't spill it. You know, like all that kind of stuff.
No one like in Downward Dog?
Or not so much in that. I'm trying to think what pose they would have said that.
Maybe Child's Pose? Or
yeah.
I think of where that where I'm balancing.
Yeah, or even if you're in a tabletop on hands and knees.
Oh, yeah.
It's just kind of crazy, mm-hmm. you know, like that shouldn't be the focus.
Yeah. Or yeah. if you're looking around and you're saying, oh, there's like 7 out of 10 people who can lay flat on their legs.
Right.
And I can't. It's my people, hamstrings right. are too tight. Like
people have a tendency like, yeah. to look around and compare themselves.
Mm-hmm. Like comparison's hard in the class. Mm, it's yeah. nice to go into classes where that's, you know, less so.
Right. Sure. I mean, one of the things I always say is listen to your body more than you listen to me. Because if I'm saying something and it doesn't feel right in your body, do not do it.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think it's a way for people to start tuning into how they feel more. Getting them out of their head and into their body because we spend so much time in our head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just, and also recognizing that, quote unquote, if you can't do the pose, it doesn't, you know, people can sometimes be hard on themselves mm-hmm. for that too. And there's yoga that's accessible to everyone. You just have to find out what works for your body.
And your body's different every day.
Exactly.
So, and you know, what would you say to a student who has experienced that, you know, in your class?
Who just feels like they can't do it.
Or every day it's different.
Yeah.
You know? How do you show up in
right.
class?
Yeah, it's another way to show how present you are, you know, because it's like, okay, so I used to be able to, or yesterday I could keep my leg up in tree pose, and today it just doesn't want to stay there. It's like you said, it's just recognizing every day is different. So it doesn't matter, just let it go. I actually really lately I've liked the phrase, and it's from that Beatles song, of course, mm-hmm. Let It Be, rather
yeah.
than Let It Go, because sometimes it's difficult to let, quote unquote, let go, you know, depending on what it is. But if you can learn to let something be, then it's like you're kind of just learning to accept it.
I feel there's a big lesson there.
Yes.
You know, you show up to class and you're different every day, and then you have to accept, mm-hmm. you know, that difference or where you're at in that moment,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just letting that be and accepting that, I think. We're kind of on to something. Maybe we could talk about a lesson there or something.
Yeah, no, that's a really big thing for people to learn.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, people think you're just moving your body on the mat, but of course you're really doing, whatever you're doing on the mat is the way you live your life, mm-hmm. probably.
You're going, oh, I'm just showing up to yoga. No, yeah. I'm really learning something about how I function in the world or
right.
how I could function in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did you go from vinyasa, you know, to what you do now? What came after vinyasa flow for you
yeah.
when you first started doing the class? Like what made you, you know, go from student to where you are right now?
Mm. Well, it was, there was a situation of feeling like I'm just following my gut. When I was doing a lot of yoga as a student, and for some reason I just felt called to take this yoga teacher training. I remember feeling very specifically like, I don't really understand why, but something's calling me to do this, so I'm just going to do it. And like I said, I never thought I would teach. I was so sure I wouldn't teach. And many people who take a yoga teacher training say mm-hmm. that. You know, it's funny when you look back because you realize we all kind of teach the thing we need to learn the most for ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's very common for someone in a yoga teacher training to say, I'm not going to teach. I'm just doing this to deepen my practice.
I've been there.
Yeah. So
I haven't started teaching yet, though.
I was terrified. I mean, I remember, because I'm an introvert, and I remember like sweating bullets the first few times. And my teacher just said, listen, there's no way around it. You just have to teach. Like, there's no other way. You just got to do it.
I would be doing the same thing. I remember I've taught my first class, you know, not too many months ago, and I was.
Mm.
It's really difficult. So what did you do for yourself in that moment to be able to push through that?
Well, I really had to rely on notes for, I would say, I've been teaching now for 6 years. I would say for 2 years, I always had something next to me to refer to.
Nice.
My biggest fear was I was always afraid, like, my mind would just go completely blank, no matter how much I thought I had it planned out.
Uh-huh.
And I'd just be standing there going, So that never really happened. But as someone said, you know, that's what down dog and child's pose are for. So you can think.
False moments, that's
right.
Great.
And sometimes I did do that, you know, like say, let's all go to child's pose now, because my mind was trying to grab onto what to do next. So that helped for a while. But I remember feeling like, oh, I'm so glad I don't have to do that anymore, because mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, I grew up in this strict Catholic family, and I always felt like, you know, everything had to be controlled, and mm-hmm. I had to control everything. So that, again, was a big lesson. Just learning, like, you know, you don't always have to control everything, and maybe sometimes it's better to just let it happen.
Yeah. It happened organically, but it happened naturally.
Right.
Nice.
But
as us in the class, we don't know.
Right. You're like, exactly.
Okay, this is an ex-post.
And it's not even about the teacher. That's another thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you're there to serve these people and not, it's not supposed to be about me. So lots and lots of lessons there. But over time, even though I still love vinyasa flow and, you know, not to say it's not worthwhile, I just started to feel like the more restorative aspects were calling to me more. Mm. So I just came back a few days ago from a restorative yoga teacher training, and that was really great.
Nice.
I went to San Francisco and studied with Judith Hanson Lassiter, who's one of the founders of Yoga Journal magazine.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and she's been teaching for 48 years.
Wow.
Since 1971.
Wow.
Yeah, there were 80 people in the class. I was kind of surprised. I thought it'd be about half that.
Right. Yeah, that's a great turnout.
Yes. And there were people, several people told me they had been trying to get into this class for years. They were on wait lists. And
wow.
Anyway, so I felt really lucky that I got to take the training. And she's just, I really liked the way she structured the class. She had sort of a Dharma talk at the beginning. So she would teach some life lessons at first, and then we'd learn a few poses every day, and we'd pair up with someone else, and we would first set the other person up in the pose, lots of props, you know, lots of things about providing support, both physically and emotionally, but the props, yeah, really help with the physical support, and then we'd switch. So we each got to set it up and then practice it ourselves.
And experience it. Nice.
Yeah. But I think, again, with all the distractions we have and such a fast pace of the way we live these days, and also I think most people just never let themselves rest.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all of those reasons make it really appeal to me. I think people really can benefit from it. And in terms of rest, it's like sleep is becoming more, people are more aware, I think, now in the last few years of the importance of sleep. And they're really trying to give themselves that. But I really think sleep and rest are different.
Yes.
And the rest is something most people never do. Yeah, like we're going all day.
Right.
Until
so
we
what's
sleep.
The difference between sleep and rest?
Well, rest, like most of the restorative poses, ideally, we don't really want to fall asleep. Although, of course, sometimes people do, especially in Shavasana.
Yes.
But what Judith, this teacher I just studied with, said was that anyone who falls asleep immediately in Shavasana is probably sleep deprived.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's, I've heard it described as your body is asleep, but your mind is aware and awake and watching your body sleep.
Oh.
So it's just learning to really relax.
I like that description.
Yeah. And that's why I hold the poses for a long time, like 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe you should give a description of what restorative yoga is.
Oh, I should have brought with me the way she defines it, but I can't remember her exact definition, but it was basically like using props to support the body in a way that allows you to really release and relax and let go.
Yummy.
Yeah, it is really yummy. I mean, some people have a hard time with that. You know, it's like, they're always like, well, when is this over? You know, like they're just so.
Okay, how many more minutes do I have to lay here?
Right.
You know, because we're so not used to doing
not
that.
Not used to
they
it.
Keep pushing that pause button.
Right. People are always on high alert.
Go, go, go.
Right. Exactly.
And on the phones, we're training our brain, you know, to go from one thing to the next.
Right. So that's why I think the restorative practice is really, I mean, she suggested that we all do a 20-minute pose every day.
Wow.
Yeah. Like even if it's Shavasana, whatever you want to do. I haven't adhered to that yet, but
if you were to, what would your favorite pose be?
I think I would do some kind of supported Shavasana.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's just, it is really, I did it for a while. I took one of her online courses was, I think it was 30 days of Shavasana. So I did it every day for a month.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it really does, like you were saying about rewiring the brain, it really does just bring you to a calmer place.
No, oh, it's like laying down and meditating.
Mm-hmm, kind of.
You know, the end of the yoga series, you're at the end of class, you're relaxing in Shavasana, you're laying down. And
most classes, you're lucky if you get 5 minutes of Shavasana.
Yeah.
But I've always done, since I started teaching at my home studio, 20-minute Shavasana.
And for those people who don't know what Shavasana is.
Shavasana is the Sanskrit name for what's also called corpse pose. So you're just lying on your back and having different kinds of support is, I think, really great. Like a bolster or rolled up blanket under the knees, definitely a blanket under the head. And it's nice if even if you have blankets for your wrists, so your wrists are a little higher than your elbows. And covered. So the four conditions that you always want are darkness, stillness, quiet, and warmth.
Oh.
Because if you're a little cold, you know, you're not going to really completely relax. I don't play music usually. I turn it very, very low so it's more quiet. And put an eye pillow over people's eyes, cover them with a blanket.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. So having those conditions are going to increase the likelihood that you'll really let go.
Gosh, and when's the last time, you know, if you don't purposely do that all the time, that that happened?
Right.
Like, I can remember, like I'm flashing back right now. It's so funny, too. I was in a preschool. I don't know why I can still remember this when I was like 3 years old. But we had nap time, and that's what they would do. Dim the lights and give us our comfy little mats and our blankets and stuff. That's what I'm picturing, like in your restorative yoga class.
Yeah.
With props.
I don't know if they do that anymore.
I don't know, but it was wonderful. I still remember it, so it must have been good.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's, like you said, people just don't give themselves that unless you're in a formal, structured format like a class.
Mm-hmm. So you were talking props. So we have the dim lights and the eye pillow. And what are the props that we're using to, and what's the purpose?
Yeah. So there's bolsters, blankets. You can use straps to like hold, like if you were in a pose where your feet, lower legs were up on a chair, you could put a strap around your calves so you don't have to hold your legs there. It kind of holds them there for you. Bolster under the knees, of course, and sometimes stacks of blankets. Like you could even do a back bend, lying down, a supported back bend with blankets either stacked or rolled up underneath you. So your arms are up over your head and you're arching. That can release that. I like that because I have a lot of tightness in the middle of my thoracic spine, right in the middle of the back. So that helps me let that loosen up a little.
Yeah. Gosh. So so where do you teach on island? I guess
so,
this is my next question.
Yeah, we have my husband and I, when we had our house built, originally it was going to only be his art studio. But then I said, wait a minute, I need a yoga studio. And we didn't want to try to figure out a way to have two different buildings. So we kind of share the space.
Nice.
Yeah, which makes him be a little neater of an artist than he would be otherwise. He paints. And so I have a little studio at my house. And I only teach about maybe six people at the most.
Oh, wow.
Because it's pretty small. And I like to set up all the props for people so they feel taken
care
of.
Yeah, I bet that would take some time.
Yeah. And then I like to invite people to stay for tea afterward.
Oh, that's sweet.
So we're down near Point Robinson.
Okay, so it sounds like there's a lot of quality time spent, you know, per individual.
Yeah, that's really, I'm so glad you said that because to me, quality is so much more important than quantity in everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really high value for me.
What else is a high value for you in your yoga practice?
I love the idea of ease, you know, like just living a life from an easeful place. It just sounds so good.
It does, doesn't it?
And it's challenging, of course, for all of us. And connection. I think creating community is really important. That's why I like to do the tea afterwards so people can, instead of just getting up and leaving, people can have a cup of tea and get to know each other a little better.
Make connection after sharing, holding the space together.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit more about ease, because I think that's important. That's something, ease and peace and tranquility in life, I think, is so important.
Yeah.
We can discuss that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's something you just have to work on every day, I think. It's not like you get to a place and that's it. You know, I always feel like everything comes back to that awareness of just saying like, okay, why am I agitated right now? And what can I do differently? And how can I shift this? Because nobody likes feeling like that. The feeling of ease is so much better.
Yeah. And it's good when you can stop and ask the questions.
Right. And just recognizing that you have the power to change that if you're you know, whatever you need to do to change if you're anxious and you want more ease, mm-hmm. you know, takes time to figure out what works. But everyone needs more of that, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Bring peace into one's life for sure. That's one way, right. one route to do it.
And the more peaceful people there are, the more we spread it into the world.
Oh, the ripple effect.
Right.
Yes.
Absolutely.
We can ripple to our neighbors.
Yeah.
Or whoever we're sharing the class with.
Yeah.
And then speak more about connection.
Yeah, I think that's just really, that's so important. Human connection. I've read recently somewhere that the amount of time you spend with others is actually more important than, like, if you are a very lonely person and you have very little contact with others, it's more damaging than if you smoked cigarettes.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
gosh, that's a fascinating fact.
Right.
Gosh, that's so important.
It's really,
wow.
It's really important. I mean, when you think about some of these communities, like, you know, old guys in Italy that sit around in the square and chit-chat all
yeah.
day. Those are the kind of people that live long lives because they're connecting every day with other people. It's really important. And that's another unfortunate downside of technology is mm-hmm. that as much as we're more connected through the technology, there's more loneliness than ever, too.
Yeah, we're not physically connected. We're not with each other.
Right. Right.
You know, the video games, you know, have boys in the house and mm-hmm. they're online with their friends. They're not in the same room together.
Right. Right.
You know, because video
again,
games are changing.
Going all the way back to what we started talking about originally was that being with people at a meal, it's such a great opportunity to, mm-hmm. you know, connect with the other person. So yeah. I just feel like that's a really good place for people to start if they want to try to, if they have that feeling like, I know I'm on my phone more than I ought to be and I want to figure out a way to start.
Mm-hmm.
I would say just don't have a phone at a meal.
That's a great way to start.
You know, everybody can do that much.
Yeah.
And then hopefully they'll take it a little farther. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other suggestion I would make for people is if they look at their, besides, so the not having a phone at your meal, trying to do a 20-minute restful, whatever it is for you, even if it's just looking out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but doing nothing. Yeah. Doing nothing is something that most people don't do. And then I also would say, like, every week, if you keep a calendar and you plan a calendar, try to look at it and say, is there anything I can take off of here?
Yeah. And where can you plug yourself in?
Yeah. Because giving ourselves that space for doing quote unquote nothing, people think it's not important, but it really, people need that.
And great ideas come when you take a little time
right.
to yourself and do nothing.
Right, exactly. That's how a lot of creativity gets sparked. Because
mm-hmm.
you're giving yourself the space in your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have a meditation practice. Can mm-hmm. you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I actually studied TM, but I didn't really feel like that worked for me.
And what is TM?
Transcendental meditation. They give you.
I've heard about that. Can you talk a little bit more? I'd like to learn more about that.
They give you a mantra. To the person who's teaching you gives you a mantra, mm-hmm. and you're supposed to do it twice a day for 20 minutes. But after a while, the mantra, I just felt like, what is this? Like, I don't even know what this means. It doesn't mean anything to me. And they tell you, don't tell anybody what your mantra is.
That's funny. I do that type of meditation. I do, with a mantra.
Uh-huh. I think
they do recommend once or twice.
Yeah, I think mantras can be useful.
Especially for single focus,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But it just seemed kind of arbitrary to me.
I didn't realize I was doing
the one that they assigned. And I have a suspicion that everybody has the same one, and that's why they tell you not to share it.
Oh, that's funny.
So I don't even remember what it was. But after a while, I just kind of just decided to try other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually just do a timed, you know, silent meditation, sometimes with eyes open. Especially because I meditate early in the morning and from my windows in my house, I can see the sun rising.
Oh, nice.
So I like to watch that.
So are you focusing on your breath? Are you focusing on what's going on around you, like listening for noise or?
Mostly the breath is my focus, yeah. But I do like to do guided meditations too, because there's so many good ones on that Insight Timer.
Yeah, they're so relaxing.
Yeah. And for a while, this is interesting too. For a while, I was doing sleep meditations.
Mm-hmm.
And felt like they usually help, but not always. And then my sister said, you know what? I think having the phone near the bed or in the bed to do the meditation is part of what's keeping you awake. And I just started trying putting the phone on airplane mode in the next room.
Right.
And I think that's better.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Because the radio waves aren't streaming
yes.
in. And I do. I do with my kids. I do a evening sleep meditation where we listen to a little 10 to 20 minute meditation.
Right.
You know, each evening to kind of calm us down and get us in the flow for sleeping. But that's so funny that you point that out, that those radio waves are kind of coming in.
But that's probably good. I mean, it might be good to do it before, kind of before bed.
Yeah.
And then put the phone away with and put it on airplane mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was doing it like, and then if I woke up in the middle of the night, you know, so the phone was with me.
But, oh, I see.
But I think it's helped to just not have a phone anywhere near me.
Right, then we're not even thinking about it. Out of sight, out of mind.
Yes.
Our brain's not going to go, where's the phone?
Right.
Can we check our email right now?
And that is another practice that I do, is I never look at the, other than for the Insight Timer app, I never look at my phone like for email or social media or anything like that before I've meditated.
Oh, that's smart.
Because it's such a rabbit hole. You know, I mean, you might say, oh, I just have to look at this one email.
Mm-hmm.
And then before you know it, you're scrolling through like all these different emails and answering things. It's so easy to get down that rabbit hole. So I just don't, I won't let myself look at it other than for the meditation app.
Oh, that's good. Until, I have heard that too in other places, a lot of things, you know, articles in magazines and stuff like that. And people are talking on podcasts. Don't pick up your phone when you first wake up in the morning.
Right.
You know, get up, relax,
whatever,
you know, stretching or reading or meditating before you grab the phone.
Right.
And it puts you and kind of triggers your brain to go a different direction.
Right. I think
so.
Instead
of, you know, like,
and for me, it's really useful to do everything in the same exact order every day. You know, like take a shower, meditate, yoga. I do everything in the same order. And that helps me not miss out on any.
It's almost like a daily yoga practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that flow that you're having in the morning is, you know, be, you know, considered.
It's all
part
a form
of yoga.
Yeah, definitely. But I think that helps to have a specific order, because then you're less likely to leave something out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because then you don't want to be suddenly realizing like, oh, I never did that and it's too late now.
Right. And we can get into those rhythms and patterns like get up, you know, get ready, get the kids ready for school, drop the kids off at school. So where can you put those healthy things in,
right,
you know, in that rhythm of your morning,
right,
you know, those routines,
yeah,
you know, that we get into.
Those daily rhythms, I think, are really important.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions for our listening audience as far as that's concerned?
In terms of which thing about
sure,
it?
Like daily routines or where we can plug in a daily practice for ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, I get up a crazy hour. You want to know what time
yeah,
I get wait. Up?
My guess is 4.
4:30.
Ah, I was close.
Because I have a day job, so I work from home, but I start around 8 every day. And to fit in taking a shower, yoga, meditation, walking my dogs, breakfast with my husband, to fit all that in, I have to get up that early.
Wow.
It was hard at first, but then I don't even think about it anymore.
So if you weren't to schedule that, when would your body naturally wake up?
Well, my dog will wake me up on the weekend at at 5:30, almost exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, she's got a very good internal clock. So I think the advice I've read is that you should try to get up and go to bed about the same time every day.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it's 4:30 on weekdays, 5:30 on weekends.
Like, okay, time for our walk, Mom.
But I'm usually in, I usually am in bed by 9:30, sometimes even 8:30.
Nice. Yeah. Those hours before midnight.
Yeah. They say.
Yeah. They say are really important.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the closer I get to midnight when I'm, my body naturally wakes up at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And I can feel it when I don't get the hours in.
Right.
For
and,
sure.
And that's important to know what the rhythm is for your own, you know, figure out what works for you and not do something just because somebody else does it.
Right.
I think, again, it's like our bodies are all different. Yeah. We all have different rhythms.
You know, bringing that awareness, like, oh, I'm tired right now.
Mm-hmm.
And not push it. Like, oh, actually, maybe I'll go to sleep now.
Right.
You know, maybe we can find that by just having internal awareness of, you know, what does our body want to do right now?
Right. I totally agree. Because I think so much of, we're just constantly pushing ourselves. We're not listening to any
Gosh,
of that.
That's so true. Especially around work and everything else.
Sometimes those little messages are kind of subtle. And so it's really easy to miss them. But that's why it's so important to be more and more aware, because then you start paying attention. Your body's always speaking to you.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about awareness and attention? Because those are two things, you know, that I teach as well, too. And, you know, I think, you know, people could gain something. You know, what is awareness?
Mm-hmm.
What is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think, unfortunately, I think a lot of people kind of live their life on autopilot, where they're just, they're not aware at all. I mean, you could eat a whole meal and 5 minutes later, you don't even remember what you ate. So a lot of it is slowing down. I think that's really important. You know, our culture lives a very fast pace. It's not always easy, but I think you have to choose what, if you slow down, you might have to give up some things because there just isn't time to do it all.
Yeah.
But slowing down for me feels a lot better. Yeah, just taking it at a slower pace. And like we were saying before, leaving white space in your life, not having every minute planned. And then just seeing how you feel, doing stuff that feels good for you. Having that awareness. Everything comes down to awareness. And to be aware, you've got to give it your attention.
Right.
You know?
I mean, and then how do we focus our attention? You know, where do we want to focus our attention? Maybe you can touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's something you have to take the time to do some exploring internally. You know, I mean, a lot of people don't take that time. Mm-hmm. They don't think about what really matters to them, what's their values. Life isn't a dress rehearsal, you know, like this is it. So it's important to take the time to really ask yourself, what matters to me? One thing, Robert Leung, Melody's partner, has done that he was telling me about recently that I thought was really interesting was these living eulogies, he calls them, where he has a group of men that he does different work with, and they've been writing eulogies for each other and then reading them to each other.
Oh, wow.
So I think that's a really powerful thing to start.
Gosh, that is powerful.
Maybe to wake people up a little to, you know, this isn't a dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
And, you know, to realize, and also to realize how people feel about you when you're alive instead of when you're gone, when you never get to hear it. Yeah, those could be powerful ways to help people to wake up to being more, you know, putting more attention on what really matters to them.
And what is it that you would write about yourself? You know, what brings you joy?
Yeah, and you could even write your own eulogy.
Yeah.
One of the podcasts I listen to a lot is called Slow Your Home.
Oh.
So I think that was actually the first podcast I ever listened to. And it's an Australian couple. And she often will tell the story of how she just picked up a little book in a bookstore and flipped through it. And one of the things she came to was like writing exercises. The page she came to said, write your eulogy in 6 sentences or less or something like that. And for her, it was a really big wake up because what she wrote, she looked at it and she said, that's what I want people to say. Like my kids, I would hope that they would say that. But if I died today, that's not what they would say.
So, fascinating.
Yeah. So little exercises like that, I think, can sometimes really help people to wake up to that stuff.
So your restorative yoga class, so you've just gotten back from this training. What did you learn that you can bring back to your class here on Vashon?
Yeah, I think I'm going to probably have more of a course than I've just been having like a drop-in class. But I think I'm going to change it to probably a 4-week course. And I haven't figured out exactly what we'll do each week, but it will be, you know, just building on the previous week. So helping people learn how to relax and hopefully start their own home practice.
Oh, nice.
You know, like if you do a class once a week, realizing like maybe I can do a 20-minute pose at home every day, you know, to bring a little piece of it into your daily life.
Right.
So I think that's really important.
Great. And then what can they expect when they come to your class?
Well, as I said before, I really like to have all the props out and ready already. And then I think I might actually limit it to 4 people just because you'd need a lot of props.
Oh, and, that's a really intimate setting.
Yeah.
So lots of one-on-one, you know, when you only have that many people in the class. You can really devote a lot of time to everybody.
Right. It takes time and you have to go around and check and make sure everybody, sometimes it's a very subtle, like I noticed in the class, somebody would say, well, how about if I just do this one little, how about that? And then you'd go like, oh, yeah, that's so much better. You know, like even though you thought it was okay, they added one more blanket or some slight change that you realized, oh, yeah, that really did make it a lot better. Yeah. So,
oh, fascinating. And I can see where asking that question would help people figure out like what they want. Because I know that's one of the big questions, like, what do we want? And when somebody asks you that question, you're like, gosh, nobody's asked me that question.
Right.
You know, what do I want? And here you are in a pose and you're like, okay, what's going to make me more comfortable right now?
Right. It's learning that you're worth being comfortable, and also the slowing down enough to be able to have the stillness to hear that inner voice, I think.
Yeah, and what do I need to create that for myself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, you want to come try your class?
Okay,
there's
good.
There's a lot
I
of
hope.
Lessons in your class. Lots of little hidden lessons there.
Yes.
You know, that
and
you
then
can
I
take
still,
home without even realizing it.
Right. And then I still want to do the tea afterward because I really like that part.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about that. That sounds fun.
Yeah, I just like to have a... I have cups from Granny's.
Oh, fine.
The 50-cent bin. And like 3 or 4 different types of tea, maybe some honey. Yeah, and just have people have a maybe 15, 20 minutes afterward where they can chat and enjoy a cup of tea.
Nice.
It helps sort of segue you back into your regular life afterward.
Cool. Learn about new people, meet new people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, fun.
Yeah.
Cool. So, do you bring anything that the teacher was working with you with, you know, about daily life into your practice as well? Do you do any of that, the Dharma talks or anything like that?
Not a lot, but I do like to close with a poem that I hope is relevant.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and she actually read some poems that she wrote herself at,
oh,
the,
wow.
at the end.
Oh, that's cool that you guys have that connection.
I'm not a poet myself, but yeah, I think it's a nice way to help people sort of, I don't really have themes per se usually, but sometimes I relate the poem to something else that was in the class.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's just, I think it's, just trying to think of what the best way to put it is. I don't know. It's, yeah, it's just,
Oh, I wish I had known that before. I would have had you bring a poem in.
Yeah.
To read. That would have been a lot of fun. You know, kind of take us through it.
Yeah, it's actually kind of challenging to find a lot of good poems.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have a few collections that I really like, but sometimes it'll take me a lot of time to find one that seems right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is a nice, I think it's a nice way to close.
Mm-hmm. And would you ever consider doing any of the restorative yoga at any of the island yoga centers or anything like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to think about that.
Cool. And then... have you, you know, teaching it, you know, since you do teach it, you know, you'd said something about, you know, doing a course instead of a drop-in. So would that look like sort of a, you're teaching, you know, your students that are showing up to how to, you know, facilitate themselves, or what, you know, course implies, you know, you're learning it to be able to like you do it for yourself or for others.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe give us a little bit more info about that.
Yeah, I think it's just, like I said, it could be good for helping people learn how they can take some of it to do a home practice.
Because
I would like to work with people that are kind of like serious about making a commitment to it. You know, I think it's a lot of things we tend to just, you know, I'll dabble in that, or I'll try it once, or I'll come once in a while. And, but I do think, you know, they call it a practice for a reason. I do think it's important to incorporate it into your whole life. So that's why I thought if I do like a four or five or even six week course, people are making a little bit more of a commitment. So they'll hopefully take it a little more seriously and then hopefully incorporate it into their daily life.
Cool.
Yeah, I think it's important to try to, even if you don't have a lot of time, to try to take some of it and make a home practice.
Nice.
Yeah.
And every teacher is different. What do you think you bring to your students?
I like to think that I'm a good listener, and I, like I said earlier, I think it's really, really important to for people to listen more to themselves than they listen to me. You know, I just feel like people tend to come to a class and think they have to keep up a persona or be a certain way or do the pose in a certain way. Really, it's all about the whole class is there to help us all come home to ourselves, is how I think of it.
How do we come home to ourselves?
I think just learning to listen to yourself and trust Trust your, this is another thing that Judith Hanson Lassiter said. In fact, when I was leaving the class on the last day, she happened to be coming out when I was waiting for my lift to go to the airport. Mm-hmm. And she came over and hugged me, and I said, oh, thank you for everything. It was great. And she said, she just looked me right in the eye and she said, trust yourself first.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, I'm going to always remember that. That's, yeah. I think that's one of her main teachings. It's not trust yourself only, but it's trust yourself first. Yeah. You know, and then given that, you can take in information from other sources, but always trusting yourself first.
Oh, I love that. Did she have any other insights around trust that you might want to share?
Let me think.
Yeah, because that's a really important you know, word there, trust.
Yeah.
It's a huge part of our life.
Right. Yeah, I mean, she did talk quite a bit about following your intuition. She had us read the book Blink.
Oh, by, I love her already.
Yeah. And that was all about, you know, learning to trust yourself and follow your intuition. Mm. So I think that's sometimes difficult, again, because it can be, the signs can be really subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes those messages from the universe are really subtle.
They are.
But again, that's why meditation is so helpful, because it gives us the stillness to start paying attention to those little whispers,
mm-hmm.
which
and
we might
really is
we might otherwise miss out on.
And how sweet that you bring that to your students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a way. Yeah. The little tidbits you pick up in yoga class.
Right.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Cool. So anything else that you would like to share with our listeners that they might want to know about your practice and what you do on island?
Well, I also am a wedding officiant.
How fun.
Which it's funny. I started doing that because, again, it was another situation where I followed my gut. I got an email from Yoga Journal about a free webinar to learn about being a wedding officiant. And I think I deleted the email, but I kind of remembered the date of the free webinar, and I remembered the date, and I dug the email out and said, oh, I guess I'll watch this. And as it started, I realized that one of the people that was involved in this organization, it's called the Celebrant Foundation, it's in New Jersey, was a guy that I've known for like 40 years.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Yeah, and I was like,
connections.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to do this. But the reason I love that so much is it's, again, that idea of sort of creating this sacred space. Because I feel like when I'm officiating, and I like to do small weddings, like home weddings,
right,
or, you know, not big elaborate productions. So the focus is on the couple and the ceremony more than on the reception and a big party and spending a ton of money. To me, those weddings are just more special, you know.
Sweet.
So there's just something amazing about being there in that moment when these two people are saying these words to each other and looking each other in the eyes. And it's just so incredible to be part of that. So I like to send a questionnaire to the couple, asking them fill out as much as they're comfortable filling out, and then make their story a part of the ceremony.
Nice.
Yeah, because a lot of weddings, at least in the past, have been kind of just, you know, if they're a religious wedding, they might not even mention anything about their story.
Mm-hmm.
So I think knowing many of the people who are in attendance probably know the story, but it's nice to tell parts of the story that maybe everyone doesn't know, or an amusing anecdote, or
right.
It just personalizes it more. Yeah, so I really enjoy doing that.
How can people reach you, Emily?
The best way is to go to my website, which is unionvashon.com. And union is because weddings are unions, and yoga is the union of body and mind.
Oh, nice.
That's why my husband thought of the name.
Oh, that's really clever.
Yeah.
And so, any other parting words before we wrap it up here in just another minute?
Let me think. Well, I think I would just emphasize that idea of taking small steps over time. It makes a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, the consistency is really important. So even if you think the idea of meditation or yoga is something that you never wanted to try, just be being curious, I think, is a great quality to have.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so just give it a shot. You know, try it. Just try a few minutes and keep trying to be consistent with it, and you might be surprised.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much for joining me this morning, Emily.
My
it's
pleasure.
Been a pleasure to have you. It's been a great discussion, and I hope all of our listeners enjoy it.
Yes, thank you.
And thanks everyone for joining us this morning on Raise the Vibe. Remember to get out there and raise the vibe in any way that you can. This is Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM. Have a great day, everybody. Goodbye.